And it's that time of the week, and we are joined by Cheryl Shaw and Dr. Fiona. Oh, whoops.
Well, I can try to be her, but I sound a little different.
Dr. Kimberly Earl. I do know your name, I promise I do.
That's all right.
Sorry. What are we talking about today, Cheryl? I can see you've got a little furry dog pin on you.
I have. I've got one of my gorgeous ones on. This is Grooming Gracie.
Oh, so we're talking about like dog washes and things like that?
Well, I've been noticing a lot of fleas on dogs lately, which is quite a concern. So I thought we might sort of touch on fleas.
Absolutely.
Sounds like a good idea. Hi, Sue. You've got a problem with a rabbit?
I have, yeah. I've bred rabbits for probably nearly 30 years and I've never come across it. It's a male rabbit. He's about four. Mm-hmm. He is in with another male who is riding him. But I can't find any breakages on the skin, but he's got like a real thick, the skin and the coat. You would not know unless you picked him up and held him.
Yep.
And you can actually grab, it's probably about 4 inches long by about 2 inches.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes up all his side.
Okay.
He's not sick. He's still eating. He's still doing everything right, but I've never come across it. It's not an abscess.
Okay. And it's been there for a long time?
No. It's a bunny that it's for a disabled boy that I go and I cut the nails and I look after it for him.
Mm-hmm.
So he rings me every couple of months and says, oh, can you come and cut me bunny's nails, which I do.
Yep.
So, yeah, it wasn't there last time, a couple of months ago, but mm-hmm. this time I picked him up and I thought, oh, what's wrong with your skin?
And it's on the side of his body, so running up.
Yeah, right up the side.
Yeah.
Yep.
Interesting. Hard to know what that might be. I guess, you know, it sort of depends if he's otherwise well. We will certainly see entire male rabbits. If he's an entire male, they will develop quite thick skin like an entire tomcat will do. They get really thick, you know, sort of skin. The chronic exposure to the testosterone can cause that. And it is meant to sort of help them in battle, I guess, you know, to armor them a little bit. So we will notice it really specifically if we're giving injections to entire male cats or entire male rabbits, that their skin can be quite a bit thicker. It's weird, though, that it's happening in that area. I would wonder if there's some chronic irritation. So you said the other rabbit is mounting him. So maybe that rabbit is constantly rubbing at him with, you know, with a front paw, or maybe he's rubbing up against something and there's something that's stimulating some extra collagen or keratin deposition in the skin. It's, you know, if he's got normal fur over top of it and it's not oozing or anything like that, it's probably not a major problem. But if they're really worried about it, realistically, we probably would need to biopsy that skin to get an actual diagnosis on it. But it's quite possible that it's not anything too serious. So I would keep an eye on it if you're seeing this this rabbit intermittently and, you know, just be on the lookout for it. The only thing that we would worry about with thickened skin, obviously, is that myxomatosis will often present as edema in the skin. But it's usually very localized to around the face and the genitals and the ears and things like that.
Got no signs of any of that.
Yeah, good.
And, oh, mate, this one's, they're so well looked after.
Yeah,
you
great.
Know, he dotes on them. He's a man, but he, but his mentality's sort of not there. But I teach him how to look after him and he's doing a wonderful job with him. And I just said, oh, I'll just think. Because I've never, ever come across it.
If it's hormone related, it would subside most likely with desexing, but it would take like six or 8 months after the desexing. But it would subside on, usually the skin will go back to normal thickness after after desexing. But it may not actually be a problem from what you're describing. So, okay.
I was so worried. They got upset when the last one died and I had to give them another one. And it breaks their heart, you know. Thank you very much for that.
You're very welcome.
Good luck with that, Sue. Thank you. Newcastle and the Hunters at 2NURFM 103.7. You're tuned into Pet Chat and we've got Susan on the line from Newcastle. Hi, Susan.
Hello.
Hi, you've got a dog that's that urinating at the front door when you go out.
Yes. She's not always done it. She's only this last couple of months and I've got the same routine every day.
Okay.
But she's started.
And is it happening like, are you going out for long stretches of time or she does it whenever you go out?
I go out between 9:30 and about now, most days. sometimes I'm in a bit earlier, but about now, and I've done that since she was a puppy. Mm-hmm. She has. I live in a unit. She has a cat litter tray on the veranda, which she uses every yep. other time.
Okay.
But I don't. I just want it stopped.
So she can. She's got free access to that litter tray when you're you're away. Yes, right. Yes, okay.
I had a flap door put in, and I've got sliders, so sure. she can use that. She does use that all day.
All the time. Okay. And what about, is she showing signs of anxiety with you going? Is she starting to get anxious and worried? No.
No. She looks to come with me, and if I give her a stop hand signal, she knows she's not going.
Mm-hmm.
And she just goes back and sits in her bed or on the yep. chair or somewhere, wherever she was. Okay. So, no, she's not frantic at the door when I'm going.
And do you take her out for walks and things like that? Have you noticed any change in her urination pattern when she's out on a walk? Is she peeing more frequently?
No.
Nothing like that? Not. Okay. I mean, it's an unusual thing. If she's got free access to the toilet that she's used to, that is unusual. The two things that I would say is, one, she's a female. I would get her checked out for a urinary tract infection, because sometimes we do see occult urinary tract infections. So there may not be any outward signs, but if a vet has a look at a urine sample, they may be able to pick that up, and that could be part of it. And then we need to make sure that we're cleaning up that area really, really well with an odor, but you've got to be using a pet odor remover, because if you haven't got an enzymatic cleaner there, you won't be able to smell it, but she will. She'll pick up the pheromone. So we need something that's going to dissolve the enzymes. So it's got to be pet specific, because you can cover it up with vinegar, ammonia, bleach. She'll still be able to pick up the pheromones, okay? So that's what I would make sure we're doing.
What is this called that I'm to buy?
Well, there's lots of different ones on the market. Just go into a local pet shop and ask them for a pet urine stain remover or pet urine remover, and they'll be able to direct you to probably a number of different brands. So, but you want something that's...
It's on a wooden floor, not on... She's never gone on the carpet or anywhere else, just at the door.
Yeah, great. So that's fine. The wood will still take in the smells of that, of her pheromones in the urine. So she's probably going back to where, she's previously smelled it, and that could be part of the problem. But I would still get her checked out for a urinary tract infection. Pop a urine sample into your local vet and ask them to have a look at it with her.
I'll do that. Thank you very much.
Good luck, Susan.
You.
Thanks, Susan. Hi. Jill from East Maitland. Hi, Jill.
Hi.
Hi. You've got a Jack Russell with a malignant tumour.
He has a malignant tumour underneath his front leg, which is almost in his armpit, you would say.
Mm-hmm.
It's inoperable. It's terminal. But I need to know about... sorry.
That's okay. So you're looking for some advice about pain relief for this little fella?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
I have heard that you can give them aspirin, but I don't know how much or if it's possible or how much.
Okay. And so has your vet prescribed anything for you?
No. I've given up on them. No matter hash of it. So
okay.
I'm just looking after him myself.
Yeah. So I mean, it's really tricky because with with dogs like this, there's always the possibility of medications giving causing side effects. We don't know the history of what other things have been going on. We don't know what the organ function is like, particularly with malignant tumors.
Yep.
We would always recommend you speak to a vet, about it, because they're going to be the one who's can get hands on the dog, who can get a bit more history, that sort of thing. Up your way, there's lots of great vets up there. And so if you're not happy with the vet who's diagnosed him with the tumor, I would recommend you seek an additional, go seek someone else. They can get the history from the previous vet, so they've got all the information or any testing done, so that they can give you really good advice. There are doses of Panadol that can be safe, but he's a little dog, and we'd need to have a pretty accurate weight to do that. So I don't really want to give you an idea of what you can use, because I don't have enough information for it to be safe. But there are lots of things that we use in dogs when they have cancers for palliative care. In fact, lots of our patients are on multimodal therapy, where we might be using a veterinary licensed anti-inflammatory plus maybe some Panadol plus CBD oil is really common these days. But it's a little bit more complex than what's safe to sort of advise you for over the radio. So it's sad. It's unfortunate that you haven't felt confident in the vet that you've been seeing. But I would recommend you reach out to a different vet, and they'll be able to advise you and hopefully give you something that's safe and effective and that will make him really comfortable for the time that he, has with us. So
I don't think he's in pain at the moment.
Great. That's fantastic. Is he eating okay and not losing too much weight?
Yes. No, he has lost a bit of weight, but he's eating reasonably well.
Good.
He weighs 6.5 kilos, so he's not very big.
Yep.
But he's also 16 and a half years old.
Oh, right.
And,
okay.
And unfortunately, they treat him, he's always been very active and fit.
Yeah.
But they treated him as an old dog with a heart condition.
Mm-hmm.
Which he has a heart murmur, but he's had it all his life. It's not really a heart condition. But anyway, the long and the short of it is, I've got Panamax and I've got aspirin, and I thought, if I thought he was in pain, I would give him something.
Yeah.
But I didn't know, what and how much.
What to do. Like I said, it's probably not appropriate to be discussing doses for a particular case on the air. But like I said, reach out to a different local vet if you're not happy with them, and see if they can give you some specific advice for that. Okay.
Good luck with that, Jill. All
Thank
the best.
You.
That's
Bye.
Okay. Bye. Now, Cheryl, you are wanting to talk about fleas.
Oh, look, we shouldn't be having this conversation. Honestly, there are so many good products out there that fleas should not be coming in on dogs. So I don't know about you, but have you seen very many fleas lately?
I've definitely seen a few. Yeah. The weather. It's the hot, humid weather.
Yep.
It's absolutely prime for perfect flea. The fleas are in heaven this year.
So my big thing is, if people are compliant, if they're using their product, we're not going to see fleas. Now, not only does a flea make the dog irritable and itchy, but also it has a compounding effect on us. If your dog is scratching at itself, if it's licking itself and chewing at itself, that, when you're trying to rest, can be quite, it's not going to go well.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, for the poor dog, it doesn't have a choice to go and get something to stop the fleas. So it really comes back to the owner. Make sure you're using your flea and tick control. Very, very important. And the thing is that fleas just don't make the dog just uncomfortable. They also can have other problems. So one flea biting a dog can just trigger an allergy. So a dog can end up with a flea allergy dermatitis, which is a terrible thing, isn't it, Kimberly?
Yeah. That's the dogs are actually allergic to the saliva of the fleas in that instance, and so when they get bitten, even by a single flea, that can cause an allergic reaction that will last 2 to 3 weeks and can take ages. And those are often the dogs where you see where they're really scabby and patchy down the back, close to the tail, where they've got some hair loss there, and they're usually quite profoundly itchy or quite sensitive that way.
Yeah.
So that's really important to get on top of, for sure.
And the other thing is, when a dog gets a flea, they'll often chew at themselves. Now, when they're chewing at themselves, they're putting moisture onto the skin, and their teeth, and when they're scratching as well, can actually abrase the skin, and then we get infections on the skin, we can get hot spots. So then it becomes a different problem. It's not just the flea that you're trying to treat. You're often having to go off to the vet to get antibiotics or creams to resolve these issues. So it's a really interesting thing with fleas, that it just takes one to trigger that allergic reaction.
Yep.
So we want to avoid as much as we can any pet getting fleas. I mean, obviously fleas prefer to have a cat. So Amanda, you've got the cat and then the dog. But if there's nothing else, they're going to bite us. So we just want to make sure our environment is really clean of fleas. And the way to prevent that is by using your medications. Mm. And there's so many good products.
Yeah, all of the new products that are in the what we call the isoxazoline class, these are typically systemic medications. Most of them are chews, but there are top spots. They're registered for dogs. They're registered for cats. There's not that we're talking about cattle and chickens, but there are products for them registered registered in cattle and chickens. They're really, really safe drugs. They're super, super effective. I mean, we really shouldn't be seeing flea problems. We really shouldn't be seeing paralysis tick issues, because if everybody just had their dog and cat on one of these products, it wouldn't be an issue anymore. It's considered a totally preventable disease these days. These drugs will also prevent mites and mange, so ear mites as well as mange mites. So sarcoptic mange has pretty well been eliminated where dogs are on treatment, which is really, really important. And also remember that fleas, these little tiny little creatures, are the main carrier of tapeworms for dogs and cats that are not on properties eating dead offal, you know, like dead sheep and things like that. So if you want to also prevent your cat or dog from carrying a tapeworm, you need to prevent fleas, because they are carrying fleas from the tapeworm. Otherwise, carrying tapeworms from the fleas.
Yeah. That's so when they ingest isn't it? They ingest the flea and then the flea.
And the flea actually has the tapeworm egg inside of it, and then the tapeworm infection gets set up in their intestines, and it can last there for months and months and months. Yeah. And all of a sudden you've got tapeworms in your cat. The thing too with fleas is that people come to me and they sort of say, oh, like, I've been struggling with the fleas. So for every flea that you see on your pet, there are 100 more in the environment in the form of eggs or pupae or larvae. Mm. And so if you have a flea infestation set up in your house, it's going to take 3 to 6 months. There's nothing you can do to speed that up. It's going to take 3 to 6 months to get rid of that infestation. So consistency is the key. Now, a lot of the products that we're talking about are monthlies, but there are definitely some that are longer. There's some 3-month ones. Some of the top spots are 6 months. There's even a 12-month injection that's a prescription injection, but it will do fleas and ticks for 12 months. Like, you don't even have to think about it. So it's really about, you know, find what's going to work for you. I am not a person who can remember to give a product every month. I am just not that organized. My life is too busy. My dog gets the 3-monthly chew. She had it last night, in fact. That means I only have to remember 4 doses. At the same time, I give her an intestinal worming dose. She's got a heartworm injection on in the background that's once a year. It's really, really simple. If you're not a person who can keep on top of these things, talk to your vet, get one of these longer acting products, and then it's very low key, and you don't have to think about it then. And then your pet's protected. Yeah. It's great.
I found that we had a few years there where we weren't seeing any fleas on dogs coming. And, you know, it was fantastic. And I thought, over all of these years, we've finally nailed it. And then the last month is just like crazy flea time. So people just need to make sure it's, you know, it's just one of those things. If you own a pet, you must look after it, protect it. And, you know, it's one of those things that you owe the pet. The pet can't go and do it itself. So,
And the fleas that we're seeing on most of our pets are the cat flea, right? Tenosynephritis felis, even though they're dogs, but they can also be transmitted to rabbits and to guinea pigs. And so not so much to birds. They won't go on to birds. But if you've got any of those animals around, and even if you know that you live near a field and there's wild rabbits around, your pet is at risk. The other thing just to make mention of is we've had 2 cats this year come into our clinic with tick paralysis that were strictly indoor cats. They don't go outside. So those ticks have come into their house, probably on their owners, and the cats have picked it up from there. So just be aware that even if you have just a strictly indoor cat, because people tell me all the time, oh, I don't need to tick and flea treatment. My cat's indoor only, never goes outside. Doesn't matter. Sorry. This is Australia. Things find their way in.
Good advice. Okay. Thank you very much. This is Pet Chat on 2NURFM, and we're going to check out our dog and cat of the week. We've got a couple of cuties here today on our website. If you go to 2NURFM.com.au and click on the pet chat link, you'll find our little cat and dog. Start with the cat, Cappuccino.
So we've got a little 11-week-old black and white kitten named Cappuccino, a male kitten. 11 weeks old means you're really dealing with a fresh slate. This is the typical time that we would look at rehoming a kitten. It says he's a confident young man. He's on the hunt for a family that he can make laugh with his playful antics. He is would suit most household. He's child friendly and cat friendly. They haven't tested him out with dogs yet, but like, he's a kitten, he's probably okay once he gets an opportunity, and as long as the dog doesn't frighten him too much on the first go. It says while he can be rehomed as an only pet, he would oh, he would need somebody who has plenty of time to give him so he doesn't get too lonely. They would like him to go with another cat if possible. Cats do great in pairs, or kittens do great in pairs, but they can also do pretty good as solitaries. It's just the thing that people sometimes don't understand about cats is that if you're going to get two cats, you want to get them ideally as kittens. Don't get one kitten and then say, oh, I'll get another cat in 18 months, because that's way more stressful for the cat. So get them together to start with, or decide that you're just going to be a one cat household and keep it at that.
So would you get them from the same litter? Because I know, Cheryl, you always say about dogs, don't get them from the same litter. Is it, what about cats? Is that
you can get them from the same litter. No, it's not a no-no quite the way that it is with dogs, but you don't have to either. They'll often, as long as you put two kittens together when they're still in that very rambunctious, just playful, period of their life, they'll often get on really, really well. So, it can be quite tricky to introduce an old cat to a new cat, like an older cat to a new young cat. Mm. And they certainly don't like it. Once they've established their own home, they often don't like it when you bring in a new pet. So,
yeah, it can be so stressful for
them.
Very
stressful for cats, yeah. But anyway, this little guy's gorgeous, super cute. And so if you're looking for a lovely young kitten, this one would maybe be a great one for you.
Yeah, okay. And next we've got Rosie.
Rosie is a lovely little girl. She is a 2.5-year-old medium-sized dog. She sort of looks like a German Shepherd, maybe Kelpie cross, sort of a brown and tan sort of thing. It says she's got a medium energy level, so daily walks or backyard fetching game is her favorite. She already has some toilet training and basic training, and it says she's excellent with recall. So that's a great thing, because that is one of the hardest things to teach a dog. It says she can be a little bit anxious and she needs some time and patience to bond with her people. That's probably not unusual for a German Shepherd. They're often a bit sort of standoffish that way. She'd be best suited to a family with no kids under 10 and as an only pet in the home. She would be okay with full-time workers as long as she gets lots of love and adventure once you get home. So that's really good. It means that she doesn't have separation anxiety, that she's mature enough to be able to hold her bladder through the day if you need to go off to work. That kind of thing would be great. So another really good option looking for a home in the Lake Macquarie area.
And a very attractive dog too.
Yeah, she's pretty.
Yeah, she is. If you'd like to check it out, just head to 2NURFM.com.au. Now we've got Marilyn on the line from Tea Gardens. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi, how are you?
Hi Marilyn. So you've got a little dog that's got some tear staining, that red porphyrin staining from his tear ducts, is that right?
Yes, that's right. That's right. And because he's a pale colour, it's been an issue for quite some time.
Yeah, okay. And have you had him checked out from, like, by your vet? Is he a short-haired dog or a long-haired?
Well, have an ease. He's medium, right?
Oh, yeah, medium, you know? Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of these little dogs will, it's a multifactorial issue, right? The staining itself is not a problem. It's literally just what we call porphyrin staining is iron from the tears, and it stains the coat. So you get that red staining just from the iron. But it can be a symptom that they have some blocked tear ducts, or it can even be something as simple as the hair around the eyes is long and it's getting in the eyes and irritating them. And so the eyes are intermittently watering more than usual, and that is just spilling over. The thing to do would be to keep the hair around the eyes nice and trimmed. Have him checked out by your vet. Make sure that there's no conjunctivitis. Make sure that the tear ducts aren't blocked to a level where they're problematic. Lots of little dogs will get blocked tear ducts, and it doesn't seem to bother them other than you get that sort of tear production, that staining over top. But we do want to have him checked out, make sure there's no conjunctivitis, no glaucoma, anything like that going on.
Okay.
In terms of removing the staining, that's totally Cheryl's department. I clip the hair away. I just trim it so I don't have to look at it, but
I got these wipes from my groomer, colloidal silver pet wipes. I've tried them. I didn't have much success, but I do have success just with a nice warm cloth. Sometimes, and you've actually got to ease it away if you're not onto it every day.
Oh, so you're getting like a little bit of buildup of like discharge there.
Yeah, so it can get cakey.
Yeah, so I mean, dogs will get a little bit of sleep sort of built up in their eyes overnight, you know, as long as it's sort of just a regular sort of gray pale mucus, it's not usually problematic. Yeah. But that if it's clinging, it's probably telling us that we do need to trim the corners of the eyes, those corners near the nose a little bit more.
There is another thing, Marilyn, that a lot of people use in the show ring, particularly for our white, say, poodles and our Bichons. A probiotic will often just help with the staining. So a lot of show dogs where they're, we can't trim away certain areas of their body, the probiotics seem to work really well. But just have a check with your vet to make sure what you're going to use is suitable.
So a probiotic such as a paste, is that what you mean?
Well, a lot of them come now, like the Yakult and different ones like that. Mm-hmm. People often use those.
Or you're just feeding them to the dog.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for your help.
No worries.
Thanks a lot, Marilyn. Appreciate it. We're almost out of time. Just quickly, congratulations to Susan from Newcastle. You have won the $50 pet food voucher, and we will be in touch about that. And
we've got something to say.
Also, we have something to say. Yes, a big happy
birthday.
We just discovered it is Dr. Kimberly Earle's birthday. And so thank you whoever rang in and and gave us the heads up. So, yeah, 21, is it?
Yes, definitely 21.
21.
Yeah. I can be 21 forever now, right?
Yep. You can.
That's it. You've got
it. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you
so much for coming in on your birthday. We really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
We'll see you all next week for Pet Chat on 2NURFM.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.